welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet, and we've got a pretty interesting topic tonight. I hope it raises a little controversy. For those of you who are following me on Facebook, please get on the wall right now, because I will be posting your comments, or I should say I'll be reading your comments aloud on the show. We've already got one, as a matter of fact, so we're getting a head start on today's program. The topic is... is prostitution the cause of infidelity, or does it encourage infidelity? And if so, how do we feel about that? Anyway, my guest today, his name is Steve Kabosh, and he's actually somebody that I consider a family member. Now, if you're not polyamorous, that might be a little bit difficult to understand, but he's my cousin's ex-husband. And he's been part of my family, my extended family, now for, I don't know, a couple of decades. So what's great about polyamory is that even when people get divorces, they still stay connected to each other in a very loving way. Now, that does not always mean sexual. In fact, it very rarely means sexual. But all the things that we tend to say we value in our culture, such as love, connection, support, nurturing, all those things. That's what it really means. Anyway, Steve, welcome to the Shame Free Zone. I'm really happy to have you here tonight.
Well, thank you. Happy to be there.
Now, I know you're actually on your way to Russia to give a presentation. Isn't that true?
Yes, there'll be a conference on the anniversary of Vygotsky, who's a Russian psychologist, not very well known in the West, that I follow quite a bit, and I'm working with other people there, and I'll be giving a presentation on some ideas we have about him. It's very exciting to be in Russia, because so many, that's where Vygotsky worked in the 1920s and 30s, and he's still studied, so that'll be very exciting to me.
Now, you are a long-term socialist and Marxist. True?
True. Yes, that's true.
What does that mean to you?
I believe that, essentially that a lot of the problems we see, both on the economic and on the social level, were caused by the capitalist system. And I hope for a world where working people come first and decide that human needs come before profits, and a world can be full of peace and prosperity, and not what we're living with in dirt today.
Well, now I guess you're aware of Michael Moore's most recent film, Capitalism, A Love Story?
I've heard of it. You know, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen it either. It would be interesting to see what you think of it, if you ever do watch it. I'm not sure what I think of it, but I think his premise is that he actually... supports capitalism, but doesn't actually think that we have it anymore. But, you know, I'm not real sure. Do you think America is capitalistic at this point?
Yeah, I would very... with that, if there was any doubts, that big bailout, I think, kind of just reminded everybody where the priorities are in Washington, in that the world capitalist system... when it goes into a major contraction, a major economic crisis like this, the first people that it's concerned with are the rich, and the people that are working people and poor people are the last in line for, and I think there's a lot of people today that are really rethinking what kind of a world economic system they're living in.
You know, it's interesting, because some of the detractors for the bailouts actually saw that as more socialism. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, it's socialism for the rich. I'm talking about socialism for working people. It's a very different concept.
Elaborate on that. You know, my listeners may not know everything you know, so that's why I'm asking this question.
Sure. I guess the basic socialist concept is that, you go back to a phrase in the Communist Manifesto, from each according to their ability and to each according to their needs. And you start with that as your premise for how the world is organized, how we organize industry and transportation and education and everything else. Right now, a great deal of industry and is privately owned, and it's owned to extract profit. So when something is not profitable, they shut the industry down or move it to another location or something else. Rather than looking at human needs first, profits become first. So the idea of organizing the resources of the world on the basis of human needs is really the basic spirit and concept of socialism, and capitalism in the United States is very, very different from that.
Now, you and I have kind of gone round on the whole prostitution thing because I really don't know if prostitution is considered something that's viable in a socialist society or not, but it certainly seems to accompany capitalistic societies. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I've kind of thought about that too. I don't know on a personal level, I don't know what socialism will look like other than it will be a lot more free for people to make choices. The big ideas are really around the major industries and stopping the war drives and establishing the kinds of cooperation between peoples that the world really deserves. That's the level that I can think of socialism on. On the personal level, I think the idea is to free up human social relationships and to a much higher level than any of us really can even experience in this realm. If the future discovers that it becomes easier to pay for sexual services as something one of a kind of services people will do, they get haircuts and they pay for some good sex workers. People want to do that in the future. I have no objection to that whatsoever. It's not there's no socialists that would say that they're against that.
It's interesting that you say you're not against that, by the way. And I just want to say that when I think of socialism, and I have had occasion to debate quite a few feminists. It's ironic because I consider myself a feminist, have since I was 15, but apparently the feminists don't think I'm a feminist because I'm pro-sex work. But anyway, I've had an opportunity to debate some pretty big names in that field, and there is oftentimes a covert socialist agenda lurking behind the feminist agenda. And it's interesting to me that when I think about socialism, I usually think about an abridgment of my freedom, that it does really come down to the people who are in charge of the socialist agenda deciding what they are okay with and what they're not okay with, or at least that's how it has felt to me when I'm talking to feminists, because they seem to think that they're in a position to decide what I am allowed to get paid to do and how I am allowed to work and what kind of sex I'm allowed to have and who I can have sex with. And that idea of basically saying that, you know, those kind of personal decisions are going to be determined by a group. And, you know, when I think of a socialist country, I think of them saying basically, you know, you are gifted in gymnastics, so that's what you're going to do. Or you're a gifted musician, so that's what you're going to do. Or we think that you are suited to being a doctor, so that's what you're going to do. And I've never envisioned socialism as something that basically allows the individual to decide what they're okay with.
I understand that. We live in the shadow of quite a few decades of the Stalinist police state in Russia, which is going to be very interesting for me. I've never been to Russia before to see that the after shocks of that, and still a lot of bitterness and disappointment over that, and the concept that that socialism means that you have some kind of a police state, a government determining everything. That's the opposite of a kind of democratic society that I envision a socialist world to be, and that I believe Marx and Engels and even Lenin and Trotsky and the other revolutionaries that were anti-Stalinist would envision. The idea of individual freedom has always been part of the socialist idea, but it's been corrupted by, well, so-called socialist governments that have taken power and been hostile to its own people. So that's a real problem, is how do we solve that from happening again? And that's a whole discussion that's kind of beyond here. But I do wanted to kind of focus on this question of should socialists be against prostitution? And I would argue with any socialist that came up with that. Now it is true that in places, well, say Cuba, where they made prostitution illegal. But the reason for that is the trade is so has historically. Under Batista, when imperialism was there, it was a highly oppressive business to most of the young women that were prostitutes. And the way to clean that up, to keep the corruption and the bad and the mafia and that kind of thing from growing, was to end that and make and give educational opportunities and job opportunities to all the young people that might migrate toward that kind of business. And it's helped keep crime out of Cuba by keeping that as much to a minimum as possible.
I'd love to actually meet some sex workers from Cuba and see what their take on that is, because I know if you listen
there are
to
sex workers, yes.
I'm sorry, what?
There are plenty of them there, because there is quite a tourist industry and it is growing.
Yeah, but I've never had the opportunity to speak to them. They've never attended any of the international prostitution conferences that I've been a part of, and I've been a part of quite a few. So there apparently is some kind of abridgment of, you know, I don't know. They're not on any of our listservs. We're not communicating with sex workers from Cuba. That's what I'm trying to communicate. Oh. It would be great to see that they have the freedom to communicate with the broader community, because most of us around the world are quite connected with each other.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. They would probably be in a difficult position, because it's not legal. So they're working around that problem.
Most of us are working illegally, though, but we're not in a country. Most of our countries will still allow us freedom of speech.
Right.
So we're able to talk about it even if what we're doing is illegal.
Right. In Cuba, the thing is, the key, they really are, well, it gets complicated if we try to explain all the problems that Cuba is trying to solve. But you know, first of all, there is freedom of speech in Cuba, by the way. That's kind of a myth that it isn't there. But
I hear that there is, but I'm going to disagree with you, because if there are sex workers in Cuba and they're illegal, I'm illegal, or I was when I was working. The prostitutes in France are illegal, the prostitutes in Sweden are illegal, and we're still coming to conferences and talking to each other on the Internet. So that makes me, you know, really wonder, well, how oppressive is it?
Got it. Okay, well, and that's, of course, another interesting set of questions, but I kind of wanted to return, without kind of getting too caught up in trying to sort out all the issues in Cuba and what they're trying to do to make Cuba free of the capitalist and imperialist oppression of Cuba, which is very, very large, and we can move on to marriage.
Right. That was our original topic, which is basically, does prostitution create, endorse, or somehow or another aid and abet infidelity?
Okay, we can go to that. I thought you hit on a really interesting thing about feminism and feminists having...
Oh, sure. Yeah, if you want to pick up that thread before we move on to marriage, that's fine.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that this idea that socialists should be opposed to prostitution on some kind of a principled basis, other than this question of the oppression of economic oppression of women, which is the reason for it in Cuba. But leaving that whole problem aside and the idea of, in general, should prostitution, especially in the United States, be opposed by socialists? Socialists do not oppose, to my knowledge, I'm generally speaking, socialists do not oppose prostitution. They're for the decriminalization of it. That's,
oh, really?
An important issue. Yes, that's most socialists traditionally have taken that position. It's not something that there should be laws against.
Huh.
And you made a really good point, I thought, in the workshop we discussed a little bit of this last summer, where you point out that it's not right. It's simply not fair to pick out prostitution as one kind of industry and make laws against that, separating that out from any other form of service, any other commodity, anything else that's part of the market. And you really can't separate out sexual services from any other kind. So the prostitution should have all the same rights to participate in the economy, and prostitutes should have the same rights as any other profession to participate. And I agree with that. I think that's a strong, you make very good arguments for that. And that's really kind of the place where we need to start in discussing this. If there was going to be a social revolution in the United States, I would very much be in favor of the sexual call them body workers. Is that what you were talking? You were talking about that last summer. It's not. You can even get a PhD in that now. You were talking.
Well, sexological body workers. Joseph Kramer. I remember we were going to this roundtable for sex educators in San Francisco several years ago, and Joseph Kramer was talking to the group about how he was going to do this. And he and I were sitting next to each other, and I said, "You're crazy. I said, you're going to get arrested trying to give people degrees in touching genitals." And sure enough, he pulled it off. In the state of California, you can get a doctorate degree in sexological body work, and the degree involves going to class every day. Well, I don't know if it's every day, but a large percentage of the classroom work is actually working with the bodies of men and women, learning how to massage their genitals. And it's perfectly legal, and it's a degree. Now, the only thing is, I have not seen anybody successfully employ that degree, so they can graduate with the degree and have it, but then how do you make a living as a sexological body worker? Because technically, you're offering to touch people's genitals for money. And that's the point where it's like, okay, I've got this degree, but now I don't really feel safe to charge for it. So I have yet to see anybody who has done anything more than get the degree and then start teaching workshops to teach other people how to be a sexological body worker.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's kind of one of those places where we made a little bit of an inroad, but, you know, I've got a long ways to go.
And all your points about the sacred prostitution, sacred whore, sacred sexuality, that and the high levels of knowledge that go into body and spirit and sexuality, that kind of knowledge, which is transferred to some extent through sex workers, I envision that as something that actually would have potentially grow in a free society. It would not be repressed. On the other hand, on the contrary, it would be something that would be encouraged. Exactly what form it would take economically, I have no idea, whether people would be paying cash at a hotel room, that kind of image. It may be very, very, very different way that we would organize so-called sex work. But it's something that actually should be emancipated and liberated, not something repressed and shoved aside. That's my attitude as both a socialist and somebody that's a advocate of sexual liberation.
Well, it is decriminalized actually in New Zealand, and you know they have some laws applying to brothels, but as long as you can have up to, say, four people under the same roof, and it's not considered a brothel. It's just women that are working together. And, of course, it's still very much the laws are usually always about the women. It's interesting. We very rarely have laws about men. And there are male prostitutes, but it's just like the law doesn't really care about men who are selling sex, unless, of course, they're selling sex to women. I mean, it's really interesting how laws in Western culture are usually always applied to the heterosexual model. There seems to be this great need to control procreation, lack of procreation, marriage, what people do and don't do heterosexually. And then, when it comes to gay sex, there obviously were, huge laws against that for a long time, but once that becomes a legal activity, it seems like, for the most part, they've lost interest in applying laws against selling gay sex. So,
that isn't a good example of the sexism.
Yes,
towards
women. Exactly. Well, the world's full of it. The industry's interesting because it has reverse sexism in that women can make a lot more money than the men can, but they are also the ones that are more likely to get arrested. And of course, the transgender sex workers suffer the most because they're violating our ideas about gender. So, when they do get arrested a lot, and then a lot of times they're subject to hate crimes by the cops, where they do, like, illegal strip searches and put somebody who's obviously presenting as a female into a jail cell with males, which can be very scary, frightening, and dangerous. A friend of mine got an illegal strip search, actually, and was abused, and she was actually post-op. She had the surgery to replace her penis with a vagina, and the cops in San Francisco were abusive, and she ended up taking them to court and winning, like, $500,000. So,
that's good for her.
Yeah, and she left this country. She went to another country. Another country where she felt like they were a little friendlier to sex workers and transgenders, for that matter. She went to a country that's renowned for its transgenders. But there's a couple of those, actually. Thailand and Australia have a lot of transgender sex workers.
Uh-huh, right.
Yeah.
I didn't know about Australia. I certainly heard about Thailand.
I didn't know about Australia until I visited Australia. And, I was really impressed. Not an Adam's apple between them, so very, very convincing work. Yeah. So, anyhow, what do you think? First of all, we need to, maybe talk around the whole idea of marriage. It's interesting to me that... we're both kind of a little more polyamorous identified, but we're also people who have been married. So it's an interesting thing to discuss, infidelity. What is that even? We certainly know that the culture thinks that, infidelity is things that happen with people's penises and vaginas.
Right.
And sometimes, I suppose, what happens with their hearts, but I don't know. What do you have to say about that? You've been married yourself.
Yes. I was married, of course, to Alina for many years, and I was married for a short time, more recently. I guess the way that I would look at the fidelity infidelity is a question of cheating. It's a question of what agreements you've made. If you do have an agreement to be able to have some form of intimacy or sexual, perhaps even sexual relations with another person, that's not infidelity in the sense of cheating. And if you're not cheating. That's something that you both agree to. It's when you're using deception and doing something behind the other person's back that a lot of the trust between two people breaks down, and that's where I'm pretty uncomfortable with situations where somebody is cheating on a spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend or other relationship. I personally, if I would not engage intimately with somebody who was doing that. I kept that out of my just a personal rule. I just won't do that. And even if there's no issue on that on my side.
Right.
So
let me ask you a question. Would you sell them a set of tires?
Would I sell them a set of tires?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is if I was.
It's not a trick question. It's a yes or a no. I mean, if you were aware that this person happened to be cheating on their wife, but they wanted to buy some tires from your store, would you sell them a set of tires?
I guess that my boss at the tire store would be pretty clear that he would want me to sell those tires to any customers that came in, whether that were cheating or not.
Well, let's change it. You own the tire store.
Right.
You own the tire store.
Would you
have people fill out a questionnaire and let you know whether or not they're cheating on their spouse before you sold them a set of tires?
I guess not. I can't imagine how I'd stay in business doing that.
Okay. Well, and obviously, you know, not everybody's going to be on board for this. This is a very controversial thing. But in the mind of a sex worker, there is some relationship between that, because we're not thinking of this as our personal sex life. We're thinking of it as a business. And as a business, who do we offer services to and who do we not offer services to? What are our criteria? And everybody has a different standard. However, very few people have the standard that your relationship with the rest of your friends and family is my business, because I'm selling you a service. Now, if I know that if you're bringing that person into a session, then it, you know, it becomes of concern. So I certainly know of a lot of sex workers, myself included, when I was working as an escort, would say, I don't like the way you're trying to surprise your wife or your girlfriend. Wives and girlfriends don't really like these kind of surprises. And so then we would have very definite opinions, because the woman was going to be in the same room and we would be interacting with her. So usually the concern was to make sure that it was a situation that she would enjoy or benefit from. And at that point, opinions are definitely shared, you know. Like, are you out of your mind? whatever gave you the idea she'd like this, you know. I think, you know, I probably understand women a little better than you, and I would suggest that you do it this way. Those kind of conversations. But if she's not on the screen and this person is just coming to secure a service from you, you know, in a lot of ways, it's just like when I had, when I was in college, I was getting my degree in psychology. Well, I've had lots of therapists. Yes, I've needed lots of help over the last 24 years. Never once did those therapists say to me, well, I can't work with you if you're going to lie to your boyfriend or your husband. As a matter of fact, I was encouraged to come and tell them the things that I wasn't telling the boyfriend or the husband. And, you know, they might ultimately be trying to point me in the direction of more disclosure and more honesty, but it was certainly never grounds for terminating a business relationship.
Well, we skipped a step here in our conversation. We jumped into this question of should prostitutes only is the question you're asking, should prostitutes only do business with customers that aren't cheating on their wives?
Oh, I'm not really asking the question, Steve. I'm just putting it out there. You're welcome to say whatever you feel.
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if very many prostitutes took that approach. That would be unusual. That's something a polyamorous person will typically do. a person that's into poly will typically say, I don't really want to be having relationships with people that are cheating on somebody.
There's right, but that is—that's your personal sex life.
I doubt that prostitutes would do that. I doubt that prostitutes as business people would do that.
I think what the public has a great deal of difficulty understanding is how a sex worker could have both a professional life that happens to involve sex, but not consider it their personal sex life, and then a private sex life, which is under a completely different set of standards. I think because people don't legitimize sex work as work, they don't understand that. But, you know, we could take this to something else that is a little easier for people to understand. Like, let's talk about nursing. There's certain laws that apply to nursing that you have to adhere to. And if you happen to be a school nurse and a child comes to you and you know, you're going to put a Band-Aid on them. You're not allowed in most schools, you're not allowed to administer a hug with that Band-Aid because there are so many rigid laws now about touching children. However, if you were putting a Band-Aid on your child at home and it was your own child and you happened to be a nurse, you probably would hug your child. It's two different things. I mean, nobody would ever think that the nurse who works as a nurse is having the same professional relationship with her children at home, nor would they think that the way she has a relationship with her children at home is how she would have a relationship with other people's children at school. You know, we consider this is a profession and it has one set of standards, and then this is my personal life and it has another set of standards. So when I was working as an escort, my personal life was I never dated married people. I have no interest in that. I have some moral objections to it. And yet, I had no moral objections to doing it professionally. That's where most people experience the disconnect. They're kind of like, if you think it's okay to take money for sex from married men, then you must think it's okay to date married men, and nothing could be further from the truth.
That's a very interesting disconnect. How did that
That's
take,
not a disconnect.
Take form for you sometimes?
See, you labeling that as a disconnect, in my opinion,
just a word.
That's a judgment.
Well, I'm sorry, I thought you were saying that it was a disconnect. I'm sorry,
no.
I misunderstood you.
No, I don't. Disconnect is a psychological term that's pretty heavily charged. I wouldn't use that in reference to this at all. I'm saying that they are just like any other thing. If I had gone on to get my psychology degree and I had been working with people listening to their problems for money, I would have one set of standards for that. And if I came home and my husband and my children wanted to talk to me about their problems, I would have a completely different standard for that, different set of responses. You know, for one thing, I don't look at my family and say, your hour is up.
right.
You know, and for another, if a family member was entertaining the idea of doing something that I thought was really objectionable behavior but wasn't going to harm another person, I probably wouldn't just sit there and go, that's very interesting. You know, tell me more about that.
Right.
I'd probably say something like, are you crazy? Why do you think about doing that?
Right. I mean, going to the tire store, during the day, I would only charge money, including you, my neighbor, my friend, to check, do your tires. But in the evening, when I'm at home, I may be glad to change your tires for you just because this is a favor, just because we're neighbors. There's a whole different kind of labor involved, a whole different kind of commodity exchange involved.
There is. And I think
business relationships and personal relationships.
It's very difficult for people that, you know, I know there were so many wives who, like, so protective of their husbands around me. You know, they find out about my profession, then they're, like, holding their husbands real close and really worried that somehow or another I'm going to grab their husband and rape him or something at the company Christmas party. And I always thought it was just hilarious. I think, first of all, this is my day off. You really think I want to work on my day off? And then second of all, it's like, this is what I do for money. I am probably the least likely person in this room to do it for free. So I found a way to charge for this. Why on earth would I be doing it for free? You should be keeping an eye on your best friend over there who hasn't figured out how to get paid for it yet. But anyway, you know, that was, I think what our background, our cultural background, has this attitude of a fallen woman. And okay. And so the idea that she's fallen, she lacks a moral compass, that she is very much about short-term pleasure. She needs to have, you know, some kind of satisfaction of her cravings and her lust, which is, this is all a projection of the client. The client, in order to feel satisfied or fulfilled with what they pay for, will at times project this onto the sex provider and assume or imagine or fantasize that the sex provider has just as much carnal investment in this as they do, and hopefully would be there if it wasn't for the money, but the money's just a nice little cherry on top.
Right.
And,
but it's not that kind of relationship at all, is it?
Oh, of course not. The sex workers wouldn't do what they do if they weren't getting paid for it any more than my dad would have gone and welded on boats and trains without getting paid for it. That isn't to say he didn't take pride in his profession. That isn't to say that he wasn't educated in his craft. And that isn't to say that on some level he didn't take pleasure in his work. He took me down when I was a little kid to the boat yards and the train yards and say that, look, I built this. And I was very proud of my dad. But he wasn't going to show up there on his day off and do it for free.
The boss would like it, but he won't do it. I'm glad he didn't.
No. So, you know, and I don't know if that's a capitalist model, but, you know, most people, when they decide this is my profession, expect to get paid for it, and they do have a different set of standards for it. You know, and then, of course, some of us get a little annoyed if our friends try to get us to do our job for free, you know. And we've all tried to do that. I've got a friend who's a landscaper, and I would love to have him do landscaping on my property for free. And you know, some of my friends want me to listen to their relationship problems for free.
Right. So if I could return to kind of a, because this is something I'm curious about. There's the prostitute, there's the client, and then there's the, let's just take a classic client in a monogamous marriage. It's not. Make it the usual.
Okay.
In the usual case, the client keeps this a secret from their wife, these encounters with a prostitute.
Yes.
Because the wife would not, generally speaking, if I got it right, what wife, generally speaking, wouldn't like it.
No.
Would take it personally that their husband is going to a prostitute.
Absolutely. It could be grounds, for a lot of these guys, it would be grounds for divorce.
So what is your take on that dynamic, on this profession being in the middle of creating this situation where it's not that the profession's creating it, the guy's creating it by going to the prostitute, but it's this economy on one hand where he's participating in that would be taken very personally on the other side by the wife and would have a big issue, would become a big issue in their marriage. How did that feel to you when that dynamic emerged from time to time?
It's a complex issue, and it varies from person to person. But if we're going to go with the vast majority of these guys would be, I would say, living, you know, according to our Western standards, which are that people who are married to each other avoid intimacy and don't share the truth. So that's like the reality. So they may talk about being honest with each other, and yet honesty is the last thing on the marital agenda. There's a lot of deceit going on. And if you look at, you know, the admitted infidelity rates are, you know, I think we're in excess of 50% now for both men and women. Men are still cheating more than women, but women are really on the rise. Their rate of infidelity is rising. So most of these so-called monogamous, faithful relationships aren't. It creates for me a great deal of pain. I grieve for this culture because of its lack of honesty. I think it's really sad, you know, that President Clinton lied about having an affair with Monica Lewinsky. I think it's really sad that Hillary Clinton has to pretend she's upset and shocked. I think, you know, there's so much deceit and denial going on in this culture, and I think it hurts everybody. I think it'd be awesome if people could come forward and say, you know, we haven't had sex with each other for 10 years and we still really enjoy living in the same household, but, you know, we've been having sex with other people for years because that part of our relationship died. Okay, great. You know, what's wrong with if you want to stay married and stay in the same household? Go ahead and do it, but why can't you talk about it? Why can't you be honest about it? But people are really trying to live up to this fantasy, this dream. And then there is definitely a double standard. And, you know, less and less, by the way, but if we're going to go to, say, people 40 and older, there's a double standard very much so that women get married with the idea of falling in love with this one man and being faithful to him and that they're never going to have sex with anybody else but him for the rest of their life. And whether or not they're actually able to live up to that fantasy, that's still the intention. And for a lot of guys, it's more like, you know, I'm going to take care of my wife and support her and protect her and give her a wonderful home. And once I fulfill those obligations, what I do on my day off is none of her business. And, you know, so there's like a sense of entitlement that some men have. But, like I said, that is changing. And if you go, you know, 30 and under, you know, it's not so much that way anymore. It's more and more that, females are looking at sex as just something to do for sex's sake and not even for the sake of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But, the culture's in flux, but your standard, you know, idea of a man who is going to see a prostitute and not telling his wife, I think that it has destructive components to it. Now, you know, certainly have seen it also be a positive thing for some people in the sense that it would be more positive than going and having an affair because they are able to maintain the marriage, and maybe there's some reasons to do that. Maybe she's sick or she refuses to talk about it. A lot of times I hear about this. It's like, you know, she just says, just don't tell me. I don't want to know about it. But, you know, who knows how much of that's true and how much of that is what the guy says to make himself feel better about it.
Well, let me ask you kind of the reverse question then. Did you have experiences where a married man, his wife knew all about him visiting with you and had his relationship, client relationship with you, and endorsed it and thought it was a cool thing?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten thank you notes from wives. I was out of town. I understand my husband saw you while I was out of town. And I just wanted to tell you that I came home and he was in such a great mood and we had such amazing hot sex. And thank you very much for getting his motor going.
Cool.
So, yes, that has happened. I working with couples for me was immensely satisfying because then I knew that nobody was lying or cheating or hurting each other. But let me say this. You know, now I don't offer sex for money, and I work with people over the telephone and in my office here in Nevada City on relationship drama. And, you know, for some people, that they come in as a couple and they really want to learn these tools on how they can problem solve their relationship and get more connection and more intimacy. And other people want to come in by themselves and basically just bitch about their husband or their wife. Or they want to, you know, do that via the telephone or emails. And I have the same feeling about those clients, those who really just kind of want to stay stuck and focus on negativity and blame their partner. It's where they're at, and that's where they're going to be for a while. And, you know, my role is to help them gradually move out of that and hopefully sooner rather than later. But I can't meet them anywhere but where they're at. And I was much more excited about working with the client who already realizes that it's, you know, that life is a personal journey and it's really about learning and growing on your own personal level, and that it's never your spouse's fault. You know, it's your issues that you should be working on and focusing on. Those are the really exciting, wonderful, fulfilling sessions. But I can't have a client base of just those people. And, you know, it felt the same way as an escort. I loved it when I was working with married couples who had complete disclosure and were being completely honest with each other and using a session with me in order to improve their marriage. That was awesome and exciting. But, you know, that wasn't the vast majority of my clientele. You know, instead, I have to meet people where they are if I'm going to provide a service of any kind.
So you got these kind of two categories. If I can just speak very, very broadly, you've got the deception category where a man is cheating on his wife by going to a prostitute. And you got the blaming category where a spouse is blaming the other one for their emotional problems, their own emotional states and their own difficulty growing. I can't grow. I can't be myself. I can't be happy. I can't because of this other person, blaming.
Right.
So you've got blaming and deception where people are stuck in that, and you work with both of those. And then you see the contrast, where you see people are actually seeing that their self-actualized approach to themselves, where it's their own responsibility for their own growth and working with the other person, but not depending on the other person, and or going to other sexual partners, but doing it openly and doing it in a positive way rather than deceptively.
I have always, you know, what makes my heart sing, what I love is honesty and full disclosure. I can't stand deception and denial. I can't stand when people are, this is my opinion about infidelity. And here again, see, I have a very low opinion of infidelity and yet, a very high opinion of polyamory. And it all has to do with honesty and integrity. Infidelity, as far as I'm concerned, is any time you take something by theft.
Uh-huh.
Your partner has not agreed to expose themselves to the STDs that you're exposing them to. Your partner has not agreed to expose their heart to the potential trauma that you're exposing them to. Your partner hasn't agreed to anything, and that's what infidelity is to me. You are taking it by force, and that makes you a thief. So you're not just a liar, but you're also a thief. And I have very, very low regard for that. I think it's a horrible thing to do to another human being. And polyamory to me is a beautiful, wonderful thing because people get together and talk about the whole thing. And if something hurts, they talk about it. And if something feels good, they talk about it. And if they're thinking maybe they'd like to do something, they talk about it before they do it. So that's my fantasy world is if people are honest. And they stick to the promises that they've made to each other. But when it comes to does prostitution cause infidelity, let's see what a couple of our listeners have to say about this. This is from Dina Boyer. No, many other issues destroy marriages, but it seems prostitution is used a replacement for a companion that one usually would get by being married. I think prostitution is kind of used as therapy during and after a bad marriage. I've certainly, Dina, seen prostitution be used in that sense. I've seen prostitution used for addiction. Sex addicts use prostitution. I've seen it used for being stuck. Like, I just can't face the reality of my horrible marriage, so as long as I see this prostitute, I can pretend that everything's okay and somehow or another struggle through this horrible thing. I've also seen it as therapy, as in, I need to learn more about the female body. I need to learn more about my body. I need to explore some kinky sex that I'm afraid to talk to my spouse about. I need to exercise some fantasies I never got to do because I got married when I was 20, but I don't want to get a divorce, but she would never understand. I mean, you know, I have seen it lead people who are, let's say, grieving a divorce or a breakup into their next big love affair. I actually had a client who saw me for probably about 4 or 5 years while he was going through he had had a breakup and he was not dating. And then when he went into a relationship, he was in that relationship for a good 5 or 6 years, and I never heard from him. He never once cheated. And then when he got out of that relationship, I heard from him again. So this guy had a great deal of integrity. He only saw me when he was not in a committed relationship. So I've seen it used a lot of ways. Let's see what Tamara Ching says. She says, no, but then again, men will use any excuse to break up with you. Being transsexual, their excuse to leave was, oh, I am at the age where I want kids and you cannot give me any. Prostitution is a job, monetary compensation for a job, task performed, marriage is for real 24/7. And that's what Tamara has to say about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The question of prostitution causing infidelity, that would be kind of, I think, an odd way to put it. The way that I, in the email that we kind of sent back, I kind of threw in the term promote in the sense of it being a necessary part of the prostitution trade. Now, there's obviously a lot of exceptions where nobody's being cheated on and they're going to a prostitute. So let's throw all those examples out. And maybe that's even half of all the times people are going, or maybe even more than half with young men. But the cases where there's married men going to prostitutes, it's almost, I almost wonder if it's really marriage system that's promoting prostitution. Because
Thank you. And you know, we're down to the last few minutes of this show, but I gotta tell you something. Awesome. That is awesome. I thank you for saying that, because I've actually thought that myself a few times. I have thought, because we have this whore-Madonna split, we've got this idea that there's the good girls that you marry and there's the bad girls that you fuck. And God forbid that that should ever be one woman. Because we have that in this culture, I do think that marriage creates prostitution. Now, I still think there would be some prostitution, but I think there is much more of it because of the fact that we have this dichotomy, this whore-Madonna complex, where women are not encouraged to be whole sexual beings. And because of that, we've got this kind of this separation. It's like you got your prostitutes over here and you got your wives over there.
And the institution of insincere monogamy, or I'm not using a very good word there, but
it is insincere monogamy. It really is. Because, you know, and I hope we're outgrowing this. I hope we're getting to the point where people are not interested in pretending anymore. I mean, what's the point of that? Why do we have to pretend that we are faithful, or pretend that, you know, let's talk about the reality. Where are we really? How do we feel? What do we want? But, you know, that's freedom, to be able to show up and, you know, for what really is going on with you, you know?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, well, like I said, we're about out of time here. Anything that you'd like to say to our listeners before you go? And I know you're not promoting a book or a website or anything, but you're feel free to promote the, your trip to Russia here, if you've got something you can refer
promote.
To.
I'll just promote you. I think you do great. I really like, I was just looking over the your essays in the book Whores and Other Feminists, and re-enjoying them and looking over the book, which I've read through a few times, Sex Secrets of Escorts, Tips from a Pro. It's really, you do great stuff, and I was really having some fun last weekend when I was listening to a number of these shows on the internet, the radio, BBS.
Oh, BBS, the archives here on BBSRadio.com, yeah.
And
yeah.
Really
well, thank you. You want to be my press agent?
Sure. If you come through any town, and if I'm just anybody listener there, if Veronica's coming through town and going to be giving a workshop, be sure and see her. It's always a delight. She's always got new stuff, and she's a great educator.
I should have known better than to ask a socialist if he wanted to promote something. Well, you're going to have to come on this show again, Steve. It was a very intelligent conversation and challenging. I like talking to you. I love it when you come to my workshops because you ask the hard questions.
And you really do have a lovely and very deep message about human sexuality, spirituality, women, men. You say great things about men along with great things about women, and that's something that's always very refreshing. There isn't the male versus female, men versus women sense, the sex wars sense. There's a sense that we're in this together, we're not all the same, and we can celebrate our differences.
Yeah, you know what? Next time we do this, we should talk about domestic violence, because that's going to be my new rant here for a while. And I was just horrified the other Rihanna. I don't know if you know Rihanna. Her boyfriend Chris Brown hit her, but he hit her after she hit him. And it's interesting to me how, yes, it's true, he hit her much worse than she hit him, and I can understand that. But it's just never ceases to amaze me how female domestic violence gets buried.
Uh-huh.
It's like it doesn't even exist. You know, and it's like you can't have it both ways. Either women are viable, you know, and make a difference in the world, or they can just punch and slap and stab and shoot guys, and it doesn't matter because they're just a girl. I mean, which is it?
That's a good question. Yeah,
it's a good one. So I don't know if that interests you or not, but and I'll plant that out there with the listeners too. And we're going to be talking about that more and more here this month because there's a big documentary coming out on the Women's Entertainment Network towards the end of November, and I'll tell you more about it as we get closer to the date. Anyway, Steve, I have a safe trip to Russia, and
thank you so much
for blessing us with your big brain.
Well, thank you. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Blessings, dear.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.